Hello, this is Wes Archer, the director.
This is Mike Reese. I'm co-producer on this episode.
Al Jean, also a co-producer. This is episode 709, The Call of the Simpsons.
An outdoor adventure.
This episode was written by John Swartzwelder, who is the most prolific Simpsons writer. He's written 50 episodes. And it's amazing that he can do it and still be sane.
A lot of the Simpsons staff was culled from a little newsletter called Army Man, of which I think four were printed up. George Meyer created and edited this thing, and it was just a collection of one-line jokes, and they were odd, offbeat, comedy writer kind of jokes, and I think Sam Simon managed to assemble his staff just by reading this crazy, you know, very small circulation newsletter, and John Swartzwelder, who had worked on Saturday Night Live and had a long career in advertising. That's where he found him from his contributions to Army Man.
Nowadays, it'd be on the internet.
What?
A no couch gag.
Sure.
That was the gag.
Yeah, Swartzwelder, to this day, I mean, here was this his first one he wrote, Al?
No, he wrote Bart the General,
and then
this was the second.
But that's here in season, we're doing season 13 now, and he still produces at least four scripts a year.
Hey, Dad, how come we can't get a decent mower, like the Flanders have?
Old-fashioned mower.
Yeah, they still have that mower, and I don't think anyone's actually used one of those in about 30 years.
This was my first show that featured the Flanders.
How do you like my new wheels, Simpson?
Oh, wow, man. What an RV.
Bart!
I suppose it has various features.
No,
it's funny that Homer would say that when, of course, he's so upset with how much Flanders has.
And this is even, you know, Flanders has become the religious nut, the Flanders of sort of conspicuous consumption has gone away, really.
Credit!
Ooh, credit.
That might have been the first guess in Deedly Doodly.
Thank you, God. May I help you?
So this is another guest appearance by Albert Brooks. And one thing I remember is it's basically a three-minute, four-minute part, and that the transcript of his ad-libs ran for about 30 pages. You could have just filled the episode with this RV dealer talking to the Simpsons.
I think he's credited as A. Brooks at the end. The credits make a monkey out of me, but I think he was sort of walking the line. He wasn't sure, as a lot of the early celebrity voices were, whether they wanted to be identified with a cartoon show or not.
Does it have a deep fryer?
Yeah, it was a while before we had a celebrity play himself, like Sting. You know, usually if we had a guest voice, they would go, maybe I'll just do the voice and see if I want to take the credit.
Come on.
The early celebrity guests, Albert Brooks and Penny Marshall, I know, were just close friends of Jim Brooks coming in to do him a favor. And in fact, I think they approached William Shatner the first season. He's just the first celebrity to turn down the show.
First of all, I want you to know.
Actually, one of the few celebrities who still hasn't done the show.
Yeah, one rule of thumb we found is that if a celebrity has kids who are fans of the show, then they'll probably do it, but you know, someone who's a little, you know, not of that generation is less likely to.
One of the scariest things is that George Harrison of the Beatles did the show because his grandchildren wanted him to do it.
Until I check your credit rating. And let me, I want to make myself clear on this. This is a formality. If you're saying to me, Bob, is this guy good for it? I say, yes. I don't check this machine. But I don't own the place, even though my name's up there.
That was such a funny voice. It was difficult to get the animation up to par with the record.
That's a funny character design.
Am I approved?
You ever known a
it's also it's pretty low key, I imagine. You can't hang a lot on him.
I don't think we can do ears that big anymore on The Simpsons.
Sell the vehicle to this fellow and you're out of business. That's what the siren says.
Oh.
Seems the ultimate behemoth is a wee bit out of your price range. and we bid.
We give credit to everyone.
You couldn't afford this thing if you lived to be a million.
Don't you have something that isn't out of my price range?
Signs on the wall.
I don't want to go away empty-handed, Bob.
Take it easy there. Don't ruin this feeling I'm getting from you. Perhaps I can show you something. A little more you. Well, what do you think?
This is probably the first time we've explored Homer's credit problems.
Is it you?
It's amazing, though. He always seems to buy more and more. And if you think about it, he has a nice, you know, two-story home, cars. It seems like somebody's giving him money.
How much do you want for it?
Well, the cost of living in Springfield must be a little lower.
That's true. They probably just keep winning class action suits with all the dumps and nuclear waste.
Plus, we always treat Homer and write him as sort of this blue-collar hero when he's got a high-level job and a professional business.
You have to go talk it over with those humans out there, then there's something wrong with all of us. You look like a man who is able to make a decision, or I wouldn't be wasting. See,
I think a lot of resources were spent drawing backgrounds on this show, trying to make them look very realistic. A lot of observational detail in the way the fences and trees and cars are positioned.
This is one of those sequences where you can see the byplay between Albert and Dan Castellaneta. It always is great when the actors are together recording, and you can really get the back and forth that adds a lot to the script.
Yeah, Albert is pretty well known, you know, for just being a quick wit, but Dan is one of the few people who could really keep up with Albert. He's a fantastic ad-libber and improviser, and his training is in Second City.
What are you doing back there?
We're playing What's That Odor? Dad's feet?
Fart!
You win, Bart!
I think they made Burger King figurines out of these camping designs.
Oh, I think you're right.
I'm telling you, this is not the end.
That's Bart's lucky red cap, which he wears from time to time if we need it for the story purposes.
Don't worry, this is an all-terrain vehicle.
Getting
back to nature. Mama,
the act break for this episode is one of the first ventures into the surreal where, you know, if a real family had this sort of thing happen to them, they probably wouldn't have survived.
I would say, you know, it's a very funny episode. This is one of the sort of, especially as it winds up, one of the goofiest sort of joke-driven episodes of the first season. And, people who had come to expect one thing from The Simpsons, who had been startled by, you know, the emotional resonance of it, were surprised by it, that we could wind up just doing a real goofy, silly episode.
Yeah, I think one thing that really has led to the appeal of the series is that you don't know what you're going to get every week. It's a Whitman sample. You don't know who the focus of the episode's going to be. You don't know whether it is going to be heartwarming or surreal or... You really, you know, and it varies from act to act even what you're gonna get.
And it even right around this time or in the same season, we do Krusty Gets Busted, which was a well-constructed mystery that people could, we would do a mystery episode with clues and a very intricate plot to figure out. It was again part of the surprise.
So if the Simpsons had been a real family, this is where they would have died, and this would have been the end of the series.
Yes, sir. This is a real adventure. Why, I bet there are people who would trade everything they have in the world for an adventure like this.
More cartoony episode.
Well, somebody help
you know what I noticed, too? Every new animated series that's come on winds up doing their camping episode. And right around this point, you know, around episode 7 or 8, it's like, we're tired of this town. We got to get out of it.
Yeah.
And nobody's copying anyone. It's just something you feel, oh, gee, that's a natural. We've set up our characters. Let's throw them in the woods and see what happens.
Lost in the forest.
I've murdered us all. Shout out.
This is a classic moment.
Hey, that's an early dough.
Yeah, in the script we call them annoyed grunts.
Annoyed grunts.
Uh-huh. Okay.
D-O-H.
We'll be back with help before you know it. You girls just stay here and relax.
Remember, Dad,
The handle of the Big Dipper points to
and
the
And I believe,
star.
According to Dan Castellaneta, it nice comes from said, a villain in Laurel and Hardy movies who was saying, started to say damn, and then would cut himself off and go, oh, and it metamorphosized into dough.
Should Maggie be going with them, Mom?
No, I don't think they'll be gone long. And she's in good hands, Lisa.
Now, a lot of the annoyed grunt, again, it's a parenthetical line we would put in the dialogue, and Dan would come up with something like that. But it's sort of an easy writer's crutch where it's sort of easy and very fun to just write in a near impossible direction like that, like confused whimper or ambivalent hum, something like that, and then see what the actors come up with. And they almost always deliver. They give us something very funny.
I believe one early plot twist that we later discarded was Jim Brooks thought Homer could be carried away to an eagle's nest and raised as a baby eagle. And then we wound up going in another direction.
Oh, yeah, boy. Back to civilization.
How do you know?
When you're an experienced woodsman like me, you get a feel for these things. It becomes natural, like a third sense.
One of the many times Homer has fallen off a cliff. Actually, one of his smaller cliffs and...
Yeah, the squirrels kind of sit there.
One thing that our show does that's different from a movie like, say, Bambi, is we will hear bird sounds and animal sounds in the background. In Bambi, it was all just music. You didn't hear any ambient noise.
I think this got a real good response when it first aired. It was the whole Maggie and the bear.
We would hear it all the time because of Maggie, I don't know, it was... 3% of the shows. You know, we knew everybody likes her and she's cute, but especially from my friend's moms would always say, oh, I love that baby. And they'd go on and on about her. Oh, she never says a thing, but you can tell she's taking it all in.
I think the moms would love a baby because she's so well behaved and watches herself.
Yeah. It showed a lot of trust on Marge to let her go off with Homer. Huh?
Why did this one befall me?
We have a cow, Dad.
What the? Oh! You're alive!
So, number two.
Also, one of the first instances of Homer just sobbing and losing control of his emotions. Also, an early instance of Homer being nude. You've pretty much seen all of his body by this point.
First thing you learn about surviving in the woods, boy, conceal your nakedness.
Yeah, man.
Okay, slap a fern on there, boy. Now some mud. There. Oh, that requires a little mollusk and some moss for me. All right.
I remember this, that whole run of dialogue was just the stage direction. It was in Schwartzwelder's script where it said Homer and Bart emerge from the forest. With a well concealed with mud, moss, and a strategically placed mollusk. And Sam Simon said, oh, that's too funny to leave as a stage direction, and it all became dialogue.
This is a quintessential Schwartzwelder joke, too, what happens to the rabbit here. I believe the rabbit is designed a little bit like the Life in Hell rabbit, too.
Got him!
That is a great sound effect.
Really great gag. People, again, people would single that joke out, how much they loved it. It's beautifully executed. And it's I think it predates a little animal cruelty sensitivity. Not that people would have a problem with it, but they still might complain in general principle.
You notice we added a snake wrapped around his arm, too.
Great camping trip, honey. Traveled 800 miles, haven't even seen a squirrel yet.
Well, the ranger at the gate said we should watch out for bears.
Ooh, bears. Right, right.
There's the Matt Groening baby.
Oh, yeah. So we saw him in a couple episodes ago. Bears.
I think this is the Gammel family again, which sort of disappeared as the series went into season two.
All right, you made your point.
Bears.
Whenever the script called for a family, we would search through old model sheets.
Yeah, and now it just tend to be the Flanders kids or the Hibbert family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez, that's cute.
I really like the lighting effect.
I think this sequence used to be a lot longer. I think Marge and Lisa had a whole conversation about boys and things. It was cut down.
Yeah, I know as this episode goes on, there's a fair amount of fiddling went into it. Again, it was early in the run of the series where we weren't here for the whole process, and I was very surprised when I saw Act 3 on TV.
I think that a lot of the Marge and Lisa plot, which is sort of a Swiss Family Robinson thing, was cut just because Albert Brooks went so long.
Yeah,
had to make room
Bob.
For it somehow.
No.
Are we ever gonna be there?
How would I know? Quit asking pointless. Park, look! Honey! Honey!
I'm always amazed at Homer's indefatigability. He's just bees? Bitten and eaten by animals, falls down cliffs, and he's immediately ready to, like, eat some bees.
We're trying to show his 5 o'clock shadow swollen and with bee stings.
You can see there the noises Dan Castellaneta did were probably done at the record and animated too, as opposed to afterwards because the lip sync is there. I believe right around when this episode was written, the Fox Network had aired a lot of Bigfoot specials and creature finding shows, and I think this is a satire of them.
You can hear this is Kent Brockman's voice, but not the Kent Brockman design. And Kent, I believe, is the design is actually based on an L.A. newsman, Jerry Dunphy. Most impressed by the creature's uncivilized look, its foul language, and most of all, its indescribable stench. A popular supermarket tabloid has offered a reward of $5,000 to anyone who brings in the creature alive. Naturally, we'll have more on this story as soon as it develops. We now return you to the president's address already in...
Is that Kent Brockman's voice?
Yeah. Strange Act 3.
Yeah, I think this is another episode where it was the original act break was not Homer and Bart sitting on a log. I think that it might have been Maggie with the bears or the rabbit, and the Bigfoot plot was originally later in the episode, and it just kept getting larger and larger.
Why, that's my husband! His name isn't Bigfoot, his name is Homer!
What does it eat?
I don't understand, what's this all about? Well, I suppose pork chops are his favorite.
When this aired, some people told me they thought that there should have been more mud on Homer because it really just does look like a human bee. You wonder why they're all mistaking him for a monster. Yeah.
Okay, now let's get back to your husband. How would you describe?
I think part of the joke was Homer's natural design looks a little Neanderthalish. Coast to coast.
Just a little further.
That other reporter sounded like Kent Brackman too, and he had brown hair.
Now Marge didn't notice her baby.
Here's someone too with Homer's 5 o'clock shadow, which I think we don't really give anybody.
Yeah, that guy was the barber in the Tracy Ullman shorts.
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah, the only one who has it now, I think, is Krusty, who actually is Homer in clown makeup.
Ice grizzlies. Ice grizzlies.
What do we do, Dad?
Here's the grizzly, son. Ice grizzlies.
We were thankful that this episode didn't inspire children to go out and find real bears because they're so friendly.
Peggy! Oh, my little girl. Nice grizzlies.
Later, grizzly dudes.
I think this was another one of the episodes, too, where, you know, the script read really funny and
look,
we...
It's him!
had a plot that, you know, went pretty far, but then we weren't quite sure how to end.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get an emotional ending when you just have someone that the world thinks is Bigfoot.
Darn lucky we got.
You know, baby being raised by bears. You don't really know how you can turn it into something that has emotional resonance.
I forgot. Yeah, this thing read screamingly well, didn't it?
Yeah, it's very funny.
I remember I'd never seen a script reading like that, and there was talk at the time of stretching it to a two-parter because it had read so well. And then, yeah, you'll see, I'm afraid, at least my opinion, it just sort of peters out a little at the end.
Yeah.
No, it's a problem we have from time to time where we get so big and the comedy gets so broad that you really can't pull it back and then give it a human element. The question remains, who was this Homer? Was it a man, or was it in fact the legendary missing link known as Bigfoot? Can I have some applesauce? Specialists from around the world gathered at the Springfield Primate... Yeah, because this doesn't really make sense. Why, when they know he's a human being, do they still put him in a lab? Here you can see that it's the file footage
it's very silly.
Superimposed in post instead of being in the animation. Biological and anatomical testing. I regret to announce that the
evidence we have is inconclusive. Yeah, I think this part, again, watching, I was watching it at home with my parents, and I was so proud, and this came up, I go, where did this come from? And I think we have a sexy female, a French scientist there, and it all, I was as baffled as anyone, and I worked on this.
Oh, the guys at work are going to have a field day with this.
Cheer up, Homer. At least they let you go.
Gentlemen, Fräulein, please. This much, I believe we can agree upon. This specimen
yes, they really fail to realize he's a human for a very long period.
A brilliant beast.
Stupid.
Well, they had to study their find before he went home.
But for all this, it comes to, I think, just a very sweet moment at the end, and it's certainly a really funny show.
No, and a very popular episode.